Today's shiur has been dedicated by one of our members, Mrs. Vivian Singer, who her name actually is Hayasara, but the kind memory of her father.
No, my grandfather.
Great-grandfather. Great-grandfather. Rabbi Alexander Sender ben Yitzhak. He's buried in Harazetim, and he was the Parnas in the great city of Lodz. Parnas means he was a charity giver. And of course he comes from a great family, and you see he brought a great family ahead of him. His Baruch Hashem great-granddaughter also was doing great things in Chrysler, following her prestigious lineage. Yehi nishmato tzerura v'sora hayim. Amen. Ken yiratzon.
Amen.
Ladies, we are studying Parashat Hayesara. Our Parashat talks about Avraham Avinu buying a plot in order to bury his wife. Of course, we know the plot. It's called Ma'arat HaMachpelah, which is in the city of Hebron. Maybe some of you had a merit to visit the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. Today it becomes a very dangerous place of the world, but nonetheless, it's one of the holy cities. And the Torah, in great detail, tells us about how we purchased this property. Our Torah is a Torah that was written by God Almighty. That's what they mean when they say Torah min Hashamayim. It's important when we study Torah to reveal the greatness of the Torah, so it becomes apparent to us without a shadow of a doubt that this book could not have been written by any other being except a Borei, except the Creator, God Almighty. The only way to reveal it is by... It's okay. The only way to reveal it... I think it's good enough. I can fix it. It's okay. The only way to reveal the authenticity of the Torah, that it's from God, you have to study the book. And when you see the brilliance of it, you see how amazing it is, and how perfect it is, and how every word can be explained, and there's nothing extra in the Torah. There's no extra words in the Torah. There's no book that has every word accounted for. Every book, every article that you read in New York Times, there's extra words. The words are not measured. You can't ask the author of a book, why did you write this word twice? He wrote it because he's writing a book. He doesn't think. However, when it comes to the Torah, every single word is by design, because it's written by God. There was once a great rabbi called Rav Shach. He was the Rosh Hashiva of Panovich Yeshiva. He was a Gaon. And he once went to visit somebody in the hospital. And of course, a prestigious guest like this comes to the hospital. The head of cardiology came out to greet the rabbi. And he gave him, of course, a red carpet treatment like he deserved. And then he escorted the rabbi out of the hospital. So on the way out, Rav Shach asked the cardiologist, the head of cardiology, do you have a car? He was shocked. Gadol Hador is asking him such a question. He says, yeah, I have a car. He says, can I ask you what type of car do you have? The students are shocked. What does Rav Shach care what type of car that he has? So he says, I have a Mercedes. So he says, I'll ask you another question. The car before this, what was it? He says, also was a Mercedes. He says, so what happened? Why did you have to get a new car? He said, because they upgraded it. He says, every year Mercedes makes the car a little smarter, a little better, a little more chic. He said, I'm rich, thank God I can afford it. So I always get the upgraded model. So he says, and you mean next year they'll figure out something that they don't have in this car? He says, 100%. And I'll buy it, and it'll be better than the one, than this model. So okay, so then Rav Shach says, I want to ask you a question. You've been studying the heart, the human heart, your whole life. And arguably you're the expert, the most celebrated expert in the world on the heart. The doctor was humble, he smiled, he said, thank you. So I want to ask you a question. Now that you know so much on the heart, if you'd be able to perfect the heart, to make it a little better, what would you do? So the doctor says, perfect it? It's perfect! It's perfect! He says, but you told me that Mercedes every year perfects their cars. So how would you be able to perfect the heart? He said, Rabbi, the Mercedes is made by a human being, and therefore they can only make something good. And then they strive to make the good a little better. But the heart, without a doubt, had to be made from God. And God doesn't make something good, God makes something perfect. And if there's nothing you could do to the heart in order to make it, it's perfect the way it is. There's no upgrade or advantage or any sort of addition. This is what it is. There's nothing better. Rav Shach wanted the doctor to recognize that God's work is perfect, and just like God's creation is perfect, you can't make a better sun, you cannot make a better moon, you can't make a tree. These are not almost perfect creations. They're perfect because God is perfect. But whatever He's going to create is going to be to the utmost perfection. And it's not missing anything. There's no deficiency. Because the Boreh is perfect. Atzur Tamim. God is Tamim. God is wholesome. Perfect. And therefore the creation is perfect. And when He wrote His book, which we call the Torah is perfect. So you cannot come along and ever say, well, there's an extra word, there's an extra pasuk, this was not necessary. Because then basically what you're saying is, that if you were to write the Torah, you could make it better. You cannot make it better. Just like you cannot make the heart better, you cannot make the Torah better. It's written in the most perfect way possible. Let that serve as an introduction. Now I'm going to prove it to you that it's perfect. I'm going to prove it to you. I have to bring this here only to make it easier so you can understand it better. But it's worth it. I have to put this over all these goodies for a second. Now look at the beginning of the parasha. Avraham Avinu is buying a plot in order to bury his wife. So the pasuk says, right after he eulogizes his wife, he tells the people of the neighborhood, he says, "Ger betoshav anuchi imachem," I'm a stranger amongst you. He makes himself humble. Tenuli ahuzat kever. I need a plot to bury. Ve'ekbera meti. So I could bury my dead. So you see over here, the pasuk says, ve'ekbera meti. Which means, and I will bury my dead. Continue. Vaya'anu b'nechet. So the people answer Avraham, Shema'enu Adoni, you're not a stranger amongst us, you're a prince amongst us. Nesi Elohim ata betochenu. B'mevhar kevarenu, take the choice graves, kevor et metecha, bury your dead. So again you see, kevor metecha. Avraham Abin, then he says, ish mimenu, none of us, et kevro lo yichle memecha mekevor metecha. We won't stop you from burying your dead anywhere. Mekevor metecha. Again it says. Mekevor metecha. All the same concepts. Burying the dead, burying the dead, burying the dead. Avraham Avinu gets up and says, please, im yesh et nafshechem, if it's your will, likbor et meti, likbor et meti, he says, if you'll allow me to bury my dead, please, so on and so forth. He gives him some information. I want the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. V'chesef maleh. And I'm willing to pay top dollar. So the pasuk says Ephron is listening. Ephron is one of the people that were there. So Ephron says, lo adoni, no sir. Shema'in yasadeh natati lach. I'll give it to you for free. Va'ma'ara shirbo, and the cave, v'chane tatiha. Take it. I don't want to charge you. I'm giving it in front of everybody. Kivor metecha, bury your dead. Kivor metecha. Vayishtachol Avraham. So Avraham bows and says, "Thank you very much." Vaydabel Ephron bows. Now I'm honest. Lemor, he says, "Please, Achim Atalu Shema'eni. Please listen to me." Natati kesef asadeh, please, I want to pay for it. Ve'ekbera et meti, so I can bury my dead.
Ve'ekbera et meti.
So he says, okay, you want to pay for it? Anyway, what's 400 shekel between us? Which is an exorbitant amount of money. He says, anyway, 400 shekel kesef b'ni u'b'necha ma'hi. Ve'et metecha kevor. Bury your dead.
Metecha kevor.
Now this needs to be analyzed. Because could it be a coincidence that in these few pesukim that talk about the burial of Sarah Emenu, 7 times it says, Mekberat meti, kevor metecha, mekevor metecha, mekboret meti, kevor metecha, mekberat meti, metecha kevor. So you're going to say, well, it's written because the Torah is telling us a story. So when the Torah is telling us a story, it's written. You can ask somebody that writes for the New York Times, for example. You can say, I read your article. Could you tell me why it says in your article the word municipal building 16 times? He says, oh, I'm glad you asked me this question. He says, because this building is 16 years old. So I hinted it in the article by writing the word municipal building 16 times. So, wow, that's incredible. What kind of author is that? Who would have known that? He says, well, it's a subtle hint. You picked it up. Can I ask you another question now that you're answering me? I see that you wrote in the article the word governor 4 times. He says, ah, you noticed that? Because the governor visited the building 4 times in his life. You could look it up in the history. I don't believe it. But it looks like you just wrote it as a story. Yeah, I wrote it as a story. But in the story, I made sure that every word is written a certain amount of times. Because I was alluding to hidden information. Now, would that ever happen in a New York Times article? Of course not. If you ask him, why did you write municipal building 16 times? I didn't even know. That's how much times I wrote it? I just wrote it because that's how much. You mean, you would have wrote it 15 times? I would have wrote it 15. I would have wrote it 18. I wasn't counting. But here in the Torah, if it wrote it 7 times the same thing, you could ask God, why did you write it 7 times? And there's going to be an answer. It's not going to be random. It worked out that way. Now notice something else. What I'm telling you said the Gaon Mevilna. In this, bury the dead, 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 bury the dead. The dead bury. For some reason, on the 7th time, it reversed it. So imagine you asked the guy in the article, you said, you wrote municipal building 16 times, but the last time you wrote the building of the municipality. He says, oh, there's a reason why I switched it. Well, what can be the reason? And he gives you a reason. You say it's amazing. But it'll never happen, because in the New York Times, or in Huckleberry Finn, or Tale of Two Cities, or even the great poets like Edgar Allan Poe and Robert Louis Stevenson, they don't have such depth in their writing that they can explain why, how many times they wrote a certain word, and why they wrote it in a certain configuration. They cannot explain it. But in the Torah, it's our obligation to know why is it seven times, and why all of a sudden at this point over here, it turned it around. And then when you see the answer is nothing but stunning. It's a stunning answer. And the student walks away and says, only God could have written such a book. It could not be written by anybody else. That there's a hidden message in a story that we read every year. And we don't think twice of it, but that there's a hidden encoded message. So the Gaon de Vilna says, when Avraham Avinu got to the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, how many people were buried there already? No, when he got there, no, go slow, listen to the question. Okay. When he got there, only Adam and Eve were buried there. Adam and Hava. Eventually it would become the burial place of other tzaddikim. But at that point, only two tzaddikim were buried. So look what the Torah does. The Torah says, "Vekvera meti." Who's that referring to? He wants to bury his wife, Sarah. Kevor metecha, that's Abraham. And then mekevor metecha, that's Yitzchak. And then mekvoret meti, that's Rivka. And then kevor metecha, that would be Yaakov. And then vekverat meti. Le'ah, which means the Torah is hinting six dead people, six burials are going to take place, and therefore the Torah on purpose said it six times in order to hint that Sarah is the first of six that eventually are going to be buried in the Ma'arat HaMakpelah. But we know according to Hazal that there was somebody else that was buried in the Ma'arat HaMakpelah. The Midrash says that when they were burying Yaakov in the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, when they brought Yaakov to be buried, at the funeral, Esav protested. Esav came along and said, no, 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 this is my plot. So they told him, what are you talking about? It's your plot. You sold your plot to your brother. He said, I never sold anything. So they said, but we have a deed. He said, fine. Bring me the deed, and then I'll acquiesce. So they were waiting. They sent back Naphtali to Egypt to bring back the deed. Meanwhile, Yaakov is lying there. And he had a grandson, Yaakov, Hushim ben Dan. And he saw his grandfather lying there. And he sees Esav holding up the funeral procession. And he knows that Esav knows that he sold it. So Esav just being a wise guy. Esav just trying to, you know, ruined the funeral for no good reason. So this grandson of Yaakov took a club or a sword, whatever it was, and without a hesitation, he swung it at the head of Esav and he decapitated him. So he must have been very strong to kill Esav in one, like a samurai, killed him in one shot. And the Midrash says, as you know, that the head of Esav rolled into the Ma'arat HaMachpelah. For whatever reason, his head rolled in. You also know that there's a very important saying of Hazal. Hazal say that Resha'im in their life are considered dead. Now you'll ask me, what does that mean? The Rasha is alive, he breathes, he eats. He has all bodily function. How could the Gemara say the Sha'im behayehem nikra'im metim? So the Hazal explained, because the main part of humans is their soul, is the neshama. So somebody that feeds their soul is alive. But a rasha that deprives the soul from any spirituality, so although physically he's alive, which means nothing, spiritually he's dead. Which means the Hakamim are saying, the rasha is dead before he dies. You understand what I'm saying? He's dead already. He's dead when he's alive. Now follow. All the six that were buried, they were alive and then they died. Ekberan meti, kevor metecha. They were alive and they died. They were alive and they died. But the seventh, which was Esav, he was dead first. Metecha kevor. He was dead from the beginning. And therefore this is referring to Esav. Now, could that be by a coincidence that it hints to us the seven that were going to be buried, and then it hints to us as well who the seventh one was by putting death before his burial, implying that he was dead already from the onset, because Esav was an Asha in his lifetime? It's something that no other book allows itself to this analysis. Most books, if not all books, only allow themselves for superficial analysis of the text. What does the text say? So they analyze it, but they cannot analyze the amount of words in the text, the amount of usage of each word in the text, nor can they analyze the position of the words of the text, because a human being is not capable to write a book with so many layers of wisdom. A great author is able to write nicely and present and communicate through his writing. That's a great author. But he's not able to write a story within a story within a story within a story in the same text. Who could do that? This to me is one of the clear proofs, the undeniable proofs, that our Torah has to be written by a higher authority. But if this was the only proof, you'd say, okay, it's a good coincidence. It's a good coincidence. But if they could show you 10,000 things like this in the same book, then you say, could it be a coincidence that this happens 10,000 times, at least in the same book, where you see this amazing symmetry and perfection? So I want to give you just another one, just as an example. It's from the same parasha, from the same story. It says in the Pasuk, that Ephron, who was the salesman who sold the Marat HaMachpelah, Ephron tells, Avraham Avinu tells Ephron, listen, originally he tells him, I'll give it to you for free. But we know he's not going to give it for free, because he's not a good guy. And the rabbis teach us that the Rishaim, they say a lot. No, you're saying it wrong. It says the tzaddikim say a little and do a lot. The rishaim say a lot and do nothing. They don't do a little. They do nothing. They do nothing. Because here Ephron originally said, take it for free. So then you'd figure, okay, so he didn't give it for free. But you'd figure he'll give it for a discount. So at least he did something. He talks big, but he didn't do free. He gave it. No. He did nothing. He charges Avraham an exorbitant amount. 400 shekel is paying 1,000 times its worth. You have to keep in mind, it was not a great property. It's not an oceanfront property. It's in the middle of nowhere in Hebron. It's dirt. It's not a condominium. It's for dead people. There's no view of anything. It's not a... And in those days, nobody ever bought property for burial. So, and secondly, it's not like there's a line of customers that want to buy this property. Avram's the only guy that wants to buy the property. It's not like Ephron can say, listen, I'll accept your bid and we'll see. There's no other bids. Nobody's even looking at this property. So Ephron is supposed to say, listen, give me 10 shekel, just for the derech eretz, 10 shekel. Okay, you said you're going to give it to me for free. Okay, but you're an asha. We know free is not an option. But not only does he say 10 shekel, he says 400 shekel. So the pasuk says, Avram hears. It says, Vayishma Avraham. Avraham heard the Ephron. He heard what Ephron said. What does it mean he heard? When Ephron said, what's 400 shekel anyway? He understood, Vayishma means he understood that that was the price. He was saying, anyway, what's 400 shekel? Why did he use that in his example? Avram understood, Vayishma means he understood that that's what Ephron wanted. So what did Avram Abinu do? It says, Vayishkol Avraham le'Ephron. Avraham paid Ephron the 400 shekel. But notice how the Torah spells Ephron over here. Hazak Baruch. And how the Torah spells Ephron over here. Over here it's missing a Vav. This is Ayin Peh Resh Vav Nun. And this over here is missing. It's missing. Ladies, go slow. Don't go so fast. Go slow. So you have to ask a question. Why? Why? So you have to know what the Midrash says. Now, if I were to ask somebody, why is it missing a vav? You say, it's a typo. Because either his name is spelt like this or his name is spelt like this. So they forgot the vav. No problem. Mistakes happen. Guess what? In the New York Times every day, on the front page, on the bottom, it says, corrections of what they made mistakes. Yes, instead of four, it should have been six. Instead of dead, it should have said alive. I mean, they make big mistakes. And nobody says, oh, I want my money back. No, you know you're buying a paper that's written by a human being. And human beings make mistakes. So therefore, you know one's going to make mistakes. Nobody's shocked that there's a mistake in the New York Times. Or any periodical, forget for that matter. So you cannot say over here, oh, whatever, it's missing a vav, it's a typo. Chas v'shalom. God wrote this book. God doesn't make a mistake. God doesn't have any lapse. God doesn't have to make a correction. Just like I told you from Rav Shach, you don't have to upgrade the heart, nor do you have to upgrade this book. The book is perfect. So then it's incumbent upon the student to say, how come it's missing? So listen to what the Midrash says. Midrash says that Avraham Abinu went a few weeks ago, or last week we read it, to Pilishtim. When he went to Pilishtim, he met with the king Avimelech, which by the way should be a lesson to all of you, that wherever Avraham goes, he's meeting with the greatest people. If you go to Washington, you don't go straight to the White House. You go to Washington, you get to take a tour maybe of the White, but you don't get to see the president. Avraham Abinu goes to Egypt, in 2 seconds he's next to the king. He goes to Pilishtim, 2 seconds he's with Avimelech. Avraham was a great personality. He himself was a king. He was a dignitary. So anytime he came to a town, right away they rushed him to the king. Anyway, in the story of Avimelech, if you remember, he abducted Sarah. It was a big mess. And then he realized it was a mistake. He gave Sarah back. And the Midrash says he appeased Avraham. How did he appease him? He gave him money. And it says he gave him 1,000 shekel. Avraham Abinu accepts it. In the olden days, even today, when dignitaries meet each other, they give each other gifts. When a foreign diplomat comes to the United States, to the White House, he brings a gift. And the president gives him a token of something back. That's the protocol. So when Avraham left, he said, please let this be a token of our apology or whatever it may be. It's a crazy amount of money he gave him. 1,000 shekel, kesef. But we know something about the tzaddikim. The tzaddikim, they don't like gifts. They don't accept gifts. The pasuk says, "Sone matanot yichye." What does that mean? Sone. One who hates gifts, yichye. Sone matanot yichye. The Ashkenazim, they read it Sheina. Sheina means good in Yiddish. So they say Sheina matonis, good matanot yichye. But that's a remnant, that's a... Sheina, because the rabbi kept the matanot once. So they said, how could you keep the matanot? He said, Sheina matonis. But the pasuk is Sone matanot yichye. Sone matanot. So Avraham Avinu, when he got the 1,000, he took it, but in his brain, he's not going to use it for anything. He's not going to use it. He doesn't want to have any benefit. Now what happens? He has it in his pocket. That's an amazing story. Ephron comes and he says, I have this Barat HaMakla. Avraham Avinu in his brain, he says, perfect. He's going to give it to me for free? Good. I'm giving him 1,000. I don't want this money. I want to get rid of it. I don't want the... So Avraham Avinu in his brain already, put in his brain, I'm paying the guy 1,000. Especially when he came along and said, I don't want anything. Perfect. That means the price is zero. I can give whatever I want. I don't want this money of Abimelech in my pocket. I want to give him 1,000. He's about to give him 1,000, but Ephron was a greedy guy. He couldn't control himself to say, take it for nothing. He couldn't control himself. All of a sudden he says, and anyway, what's 400 between friends? Avraham Avinu says, huh, Rasha? He went from zero to 400, a lot of money for this Ma'arat HaMakpelah. So what does Avraham Avinu say? Because he's taking advantage of me, I'm going to give him the 400. So he pays him 400. Meanwhile, he was supposed to make 1,000. So how much did he lose? So the pasuk over here says, Vayishkol Avraham le'Ephron, it's missing a vav, because he was missing 600. He was missing 6. He was supposed to get 6 more hundreds. But because he was greedy, the Torah says, Ephron was missing vav. Now, by the way, just by a missing letter, look at the whole story, how it's hinted. If this works, it'll be very good. How much is resh? How much is peh?
80.
So that's 280? And how much is ayin?
70.
So it's 280 and 70?
300?
350. And nun?
400.
So Ephron equals 400.
Wow.
Without a vav, it equals 400, the exact amount of money that he gave him. So it could be a coincidence that the guy's name is Ephron, missing a vav because he only got 400, he's missing vav because he was supposed to get another 6. Now I'm going to tell you another secret. I always had this question, but I have an answer now. Why would Avraham let Ephron take advantage of him? You tell me, oh, because Avraham was a man of chesed. What, so it means if you're a man of chesed, you're allowed to let people abuse you? Because you're a man of chesed? Why doesn't Avraham tell Ephron, hey, 400, 400, that's a crazy money. What's the market? What is the real estate agent say? The real estate agent says it's worth 10. You're charging me 400, I'm embarrassed? Why does he give him the money and everybody walks away saying, Ephron took advantage of Avraham. I don't want my father to get taken advantage of. Why does he let himself get taken advantage of? I have the answer. You know what the answer is? Avraham Avinu wanted to give him 1,000. Ephron doesn't know that. So Ephron, because of his greed, says, what's 400? So Avraham Avinu hears 400. So what does he do? Avraham Avinu takes out of his pocket 1,000. And he says, how much you want? He says, 400. He peels off $400, $400,000, and he puts the rest back in his pocket. Now what does Ephron say? I could have got more. Ephron walks away burning. He says, I didn't know he has 1,000 in his pocket. Avraham Avinu walks away with 600 in his pocket, and Ephron says, I went too low. If I would have said 5, I could have got 5. He's had all that money in his pocket, and he gave it to me like nothing. He gave it to me like nothing. I asked him for 400. He didn't question the price. He didn't say it's too expensive. He didn't say it's not the market value. He took the money, but on purpose, he took out all 1,000. How much you want? 4? Only 4? Okay, thank you very much. I've changed. I'm going to make my mind. Now you can't say, no, I want more. It's too late. So therefore, on the contrary, who walked away upset? Ephron walked away because he's chaser vav. That's why he remains chaser vav the rest of his life. Because he always felt for the rest of his life, I'm missing the 6. I could have got 6. So when they come to Ephron and say, wow, what a deal. Look how much you sold it for. He goes, I could have got more. I could, like you hear the businessman say, I could have got more money. I should have sold it. This Ephron kicking himself for the rest of his life. He's chaser vav for the rest of his life. There was a great story about the great rabbi called Satmar Rabbi. The Satmar Rabbi, once somebody came to him, and he said, great rabbi, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's okay, the class is almost over. He comes along to the Satmar Rebbe and he says, he was getting married or he's marrying off a child. He needs $500. So Satmar Rebbe says, $500? Let me see. He sees in his pocket he has $80. He says, okay, hold this over here. He says, one second. He calls his Rebbetzin. He says, you have any money in your pocketbook? He says, I have $100. Lend me $100. Oh, 100. What is it, 180? One second. He looks in the book. Oh, here's another 20. And then he says, okay, what do we have, 200? One second, I think I have upstairs. And he's going around the house collecting 20s, 50. Finally he gets to 500. He says, here it is. So the guy says, thank you very much. He's very happy. He leaves. The students tell the Satmar Rebbe, Rebbe, what did you do? They open the Rebbe's drawer and they see he has tens of thousands of dollars in cash that he gives to the poor people every day. So what are you making a whole scavenger hunt for $500? Your money's here. He says, when you give charity, you have to give with chokhmah. He asked for 500. If I would have opened the drawer and he would have seen all this money, he would have said, ooh, I should have asked for more money. He would have walked away and said, I could have, look at that guy, I asked for $1 million, I would have got. But now he walks away and says, wow, the guy gave me his last penny. I'm glad I asked for 500. He couldn't give me 501 even, this guy. He doesn't even have a dollar to give me. He gave me his borrowing from his wife to give me the money. So when he walks, he says, I feel good. I got as much as I was able to get. So the Satmar Rebbe did that on purpose. So the guy walks away feeling proper. Avraham Avinu did the opposite. Avraham Avinu says, you're going to take advantage of me? You're going to regret it. So when he took out the money, he said, you only want 4? And the 4. Hey, what about the 6? Well, you didn't ask for the 6. I put it back in my pocket. And therefore, Ephron is chaser vav. Ephron is gematria 400. And the rabbis say as well, that Ephron, why does he ask for so much money? Because Ephron is, it's greed. It's nothing but greed. Such a person like this, why would he ask for so much money? So the rabbi says there's two types of people. There's somebody that's called Tov Ayin. Tov Ayin means he has a good eye. A good eye means he's generous. He's generous with people. Keep the change. It's my pleasure. Don't have to pay me back. Tov Ayin, they're not looking to count pennies. Tov Ayin. And then you have, God forbid, the opposite. They call the person Ra Ayin. Or Ayin Ra. That's a bad eye. Bad eye means he's stingy. He's consumed by greed. So the classic example of Ra'ayin is Ephron. Because keep in mind, Not only did he take advantage of Abraham, but you take advantage of a man that's burying his wife? Keep in mind, Sarah is dead. I mean, the man just came back from the funeral. And on that day you take advantage, even if a person has a heart, but he's greedy, he says, "Today I cannot be greedy. The guy's just buried. How can I take advantage of a man like this under such a situation?" And it was a sudden death. It wasn't expected. So the man came home shocked. And on this day you're going to turn the guy upside down? So he was a terrible guy, Ephron. He's not Ayin. So the rabbis come along and they say that he was not Ayin. And we know that Ra is equals how much? Well, Resh is 200 and Ayin is 70. So that's 270. And Ayin is 70 and Yud is 10. That's 80 and Nun is 50. So that's how much? 130. 130 plus 270 is how much? 400. So Ephron's name, which equals 400, is the Gematria Ra Ayin. Because that's who he is. Which means his name is synonymous with greed. And numerically it equals the same exact number. And oddly enough, or coincidentally enough, which is no coincidence, it equals the same number to show you his greed. The 400 was the amount of his greed. Now how could that be? How could you write a book that the guy's name and the name for stingy are equal, and it equals the amount that he showed his greed, which is 400. A regular author cannot write such a way. And this is just another example, besides the first example that I showed you, of the seven kevors, emedra. And then you have this over here, which shows you another incredible proof that our Torah has to be Menash Hamayim. The last one, although I said there's 10,000 of these. There's 10, but we don't have 10,000 papers here. But there's 10,000. At the end of this story, after he buys the Marat HaMachpelah, the Pasuk writes,
V'Hashem Berach et Abraham Bakor.
So it says, God blessed Abraham with everything. But it doesn't tell us what everything is. Well, because everything is everything. It doesn't have to tell me what everything is. He blessed him with everything. So whatever you think is a blessing, Abraham was blessed. Bakol. Some say he had a daughter. Some say he had a daughter and his daughter's name was Bakol. Okay, that's one rabbi says. Bakol Shema. Her name was Bakol. But the Midrash writes a riddle. It's nothing but a riddle. The Midrash says, from this pasuk, you see that Abraham Avinu kept all the mitzvot of the Torah, including the mitzvah of Sukkah. They said, hold it. We know Abraham kept all the mitzvot. We learned that already many times. But in this pasuk, the rabbis say, you see, he even sat in the Sukkah. So they asked the Gaon Mevilna. They said, well, I'm looking at this pasuk. Where do you see Sukkah? There's no word Sukkah in this pasuk. So the Gaon Mevilna said, what are you talking about? Of course, from this pasuk you see he sat in the sukkah. Because if you look in the Torah in the end of Devarim, where it talks about the holiday of Sukkot, what does the pasuk say? There's three pasukim that talk about Sukkot. The first pasuk says, Basukkot teshvu shev'a yamin. That's the pasuk. Sit in the sukkah 7 days. And then it says, who has to sit in the sukkah? Kol ha'ezrach the Israel Yeshvu. All the citizens of Israel will sit in the Sukkah. And then the Torah says, why do we sit in the Sukkah? The Ma'an Yid'u Dorotechem. So the future generations will know that God took us out of Egypt. The three Pesukim that talk about Sukkot. The first Pesuk is Basukkot. The second Pesuk is Kol Ha'ezrach. And the third pasuk is what? Lema'an Yid'u. What does that spell, the first three letters? Bakol. So the rabbi saw Avraham Hashem, Berach, and Avraham Bakol. From here you see that he sat in the sukkah. Because these three letters are exactly the three letters that introduced the mitzvah of sukkah. Now, Look at the symmetry. Look at the perfection of something that's written by Abraham, a code word, Bakol. And that word Bakol already introduces a mitzvah of sukkah. So they asked the Gaon Mevilna. They said, to build a kosher sukkah, how many walls does it have to have? No? Four walls. A good sukkah. Ladies, I know you know all the laws. A good sukkah, a perfect sukkah. A perfect sukkah. So the Gaon Mevilna said, four walls. And if you want to make a not so good sukkah, how many walls? Three walls. And if you want to make the minimum sukkah, two walls and a little. Two walls and a little drop. And look at this. Four walls, three walls, and two walls and a dot. And it spells the word sukkah. So you see, the letters of the word sukkah. How could it be that the construction of, we're not even looking at the gematria, just the way the letters are constructed, a four-walled structure, a three-walled structure, and then a two-walled structure with a little tefah, which is according to the halakha. These are only three examples of the genius of our Torah, about the brilliance of our Torah. And that's why we say, every time we say a beracha in the Torah, we say, Asher natananu torato torat emet. What does the word emet mean? Emet means it's the absolute truth. You see, when Mercedes makes a car, it's not emet. Why? Because next year they change it. Emet doesn't change. 1 + 1 = 2, they don't say, well, next year we're going to make it better. It's 2 forever. It cannot be emet unless it's absolute. Once Mercedes has to keep on changing their cars, so you see, it's not ultimate perfection. But when you come to our Torah, it's emet, because everything works out and everything, and you cannot make the book better. If you gave it to the biggest Sadiqim and the biggest Imam and said, perfect it, they would put it through their genius brains and they would say, we cannot even find an extra dot to take away. There's no fat. There's nothing that's waste. Everything is, and we can't even switch words around. Because we see that from the way the words are configured, and when the word is missing a letter, there's a reason. And when the word has an extra letter, there's a reason as well. And therefore, these type of chedushim confirm to us how lucky we are that God gave us His book. This is the book that the Borei Olam gave us. And that's why one rabbi said, well, we receive the Torah on Shavuot, but we don't dance with the Torah till Simchat Torah, which is 6 months later. So one rabbi said, what do you mean? We should dance on Shavuot. Nobody dances with the Torah on Shavuot. Shavuot, the holiday comes and goes. When do we dance with the Torah? Simchat Torah. What do you mean? But that's 6 months later. So the Magid Medubna said a mashal, and I'll leave you with this mashal. He said there was once a king, and he wanted to marry off his daughter, the princess. So he brought all potential princes, who are potential grooms. But he saw that all the princes were haughty, and they were all arrogant, and they all had egos. And he said, I want my daughter to marry these stuck-up people. So he told his servants, go to the village and find me a simple, good, humble guy who has brains. So they went. They go to a certain farm, and they see a simple guy working in overalls, regular villager. They look at him. They say, this guy can be a potential candidate. They said, listen, the king wants to see you. The king wants to see me? I'm nothing. I'm a farmer. What does the king want to see? He asked to see you. He goes to the palace. Overalls. He's wearing a simple man. The king says, please sit. He said, I want to ask you a question. What's your opinion on the economy? The economy? What do I know from economy? He doesn't make any money even. But he starts to, the king asks him a question. He said, well, now that you ask me a question, I think about this and about that, at this rate, at that rate. He has wisdom, the man. He said, what do you think about foreign policy? I said, I'm not an expert, but if you're asking me, so the king said, look at this guy. He's humble, he's smart, good. So we give him a tuxedo, we give him clothes, doesn't matter. Clothes, we have enough clothes. He says to the fellow, he says, listen, are you married? He said, no, I'm not married. Perfect. He says, I want to make you a proposition, and I don't give you an opportunity to refuse it. He said, what is this? I want you to marry the princess. Right, the princess. He's shocked. He said, don't worry, we'll give you clothes, we'll give you everything. I'll make a wedding for you. The wedding will be in 3 days. So he cannot say no. And we want you to stay on the palace, we'll give you a room for 3 days, and then you'll live in the palace next door. And he can't believe it. He goes back to his room, and he's crying, and he's crying. He says, why is the king giving me his daughter? Must be she's ugly. Why would the king pick me? Must be she's the ugliest girl that ever lived in the history of the world. Why would he pick me? Must be, who's going to marry such an ugly girl? And therefore, he chose me. Now I'm going to be stuck with this ugly girl my whole life. Why do I have to suffer? Because I'm a villager, I have to suffer now, marry this ugly girl? What is he going to do? He has no choice. The day of the wedding comes, he goes into the hall and he sees the princess. He says, my gosh, this is the prettiest girl he ever saw in his life. I don't believe it. It cannot be the prettiest girl. He says, must be she has boils all over her body. He says, I cannot see the boils. Must be underneath. There's all trouble over here. I'm stuck now. The king is giving me the... Otherwise, why would they give it to me? So they're making a wedding, and everybody's happy at the wedding. He's crying at the wedding. He's crying. When I get over, I'm stuck. I'm stuck for the rest of my life. And you cannot divorce the daughter of the queen, of the king. I'm stuck with her forever. He finishes the wedding. He sees she has no boils. She has no blemishes. He says, but for sure she has bad character. She must be a violent. She must probably have some disease. In the middle of the night, she's going to kill me maybe one night. Maybe she has some sort of disorder, mental disorder. She has a crazy lady in the middle of the night. If I say one, if I sneeze, she's going to get up and kill me. So he notices after 6-7 months, she has perfect character. She's patient. She's charming. She's wonderful. All of a sudden he realizes that this is a dream. She has no flaws. He goes back to his father-in-law, the king, and says, my dear king, could you make me another wedding? Another wedding? We made you a $1 million wedding. I have to be honest with you. I wasn't happy at the wedding for the reasons that I thought. But now that I see how great this girl is, I want to make another so I can be happy at my own wedding. Now I want to dance with the bride. I want to be happy. Now I see what it is. When God gave us the Torah, He didn't give us a choice. He held a mountain over our head and He said, if you accept the Torah, good. If not, I'm going to bury you here. So we said to ourselves, what kind of book is this? If He's forcing us to take the book and nobody else wanted to take the book. He went to all the other nations, they said, no. And then He comes and says, He puts a gun down and says, take the book. So on the day of Matan Torah, we took the book, but we were scared. We said, we're stuck with this bride now for the rest of our lives. And then for the next 6 months, we started to open the book. And we started to learn it. We said, wow, look how beautiful. There's no blemishes, it's perfect, it's ethical, it's valuable, it's gorgeous. The book is stunning. Look at the book. So we went to God, we said, God, on Shavuot we accepted it, but we didn't know what the bride is. Now we know what the bride is. Give us another holiday so we can dance with the bride. Make us another holiday. God said, good, Simchat Torah. So on Simchat Torah we dance, which means only after you study the book, then you decide that you want to dance with the book and you want to enjoy the book and love the book. But if the book is never opened, so then you have no connection to the book. And therefore the purpose of at least the shiur that we discussed today is to show you the level of divinity that's in the book. This is God's signature in the book. And when you see it, there's no other reaction but to take the book and kiss the book, and to adore the book, and to treasure the book, and to feel lucky Asher b'harvanu mikol ha'amim, you chose us. We're simple people, we're villagers, and you gave us the king's book, the king's princess, the Torah, the princess of God. And this you gave it to us, therefore it gives us a great feeling. Asher b'harvanu mikol ha'amim, venatananu torato, torat emet.